Good morning, everyone. Today is Tuesday, February 9th, 8 a.m. in the morning in beautiful Oregon. And what I would like to do real quick is just open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1029. And just, I didn't plan to hear this. This bill is not moving at this point in time. But Teresa, would you come forward and just state where we're at with the rules and that the intent of the legislature is being followed?
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Teresa Miller. I'm the administrator of the Insurance Division at the Department of Consumer and Business Services, and I appreciate the opportunity just to comment briefly on the bill and just tell you where we're at. The Insurance Division is actually in the process right now of finalizing rules that will make all individual, small group, and portability health insurance rate filing documents public, and which I believe is one of the primary objectives of this bill. And our hope and intent at this point is to finalize those rules probably this week and file with the Secretary of State. So from our perspective, I think we are very comfortable that we have acted within the statutory authority that we have today. So from our perspective, I don't think we see a need for this bill. Having said that, if the legislature decided to pass this legislation, I certainly don't think it would hurt anything, because I think where we're headed is the same place that this bill proposes to go.
Great. Any comment? All right. With that, I'm going to close. Thank you, Teresa. I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1029. And I need to open a work session on Senate Bill 1029 just to move it to be, keep it alive to Thursday. That's the process, according to Rick.
You have to go into work session to roll it over?
Yeah. Okay. Rick, you said that we needed to roll it, open work session to roll this over to Thursday.
Okay.
So may I have...
You don't. All you have to do is announce you're rolling it over.
Okay, we're rolling it over.
Okay.
And with that, till Thursday, and with that, we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 1029. And we're going to now open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1040. And should we go... We're waiting for the Majority Leader, Senator Devlin, and there he is.
Do you
want me to approach? Yes. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my understanding, having been in this hearing room, is that you've already opened a hearing on SB 1040.
Now, who are you?
Senator Richard Devlin, Senate District 19.
I thought I recognized you.
You does look familiar.
I have about 35 interviews being conducted just next door to you. Senate Bill 1040. With over 158,000 jobs, the healthcare industry is a major player in Oregon's economy. Non-governmental healthcare employment makes up 9% of Oregon's labor market. Healthcare is predicted to be a major growth industry in Oregon. Over the next 10 years, Oregon is predicting a 13% growth in population and a 33% growth in citizens over the age of 65. That's us. Even with the slowdown in the economy, the healthcare field is predicted to grow by 27% by 2016. In order for Oregon to meet this growing demand effectively and efficiently, we must know more about the dynamics at work in Oregon health, in the Oregon healthcare industry. Last session, we took an important step forward in House Bill 2009 with the creation of the Healthcare Workforce Database. But the scope of this database is severely limited in its practical applications. SB 1040 would create a universal provider registry that would look at the healthcare workforce in a much broader context in order to be able to study the changing dynamics and begin to form a workforce development strategy that can address career ladders, needs in specific fields such as psychiatry or geriatrics, and includes the non-licensed and paraprofessional workforce. SB 1040 seeks to reduce redundancies by allowing workers to have their criminal background check clearance transferable to new employers for 2 years. This was particularly needed in the paraprofessional healthcare workforce due to the high turnover and the propensity of workers to have multiple employers simultaneously. I might comment on that. In many cases, that's by necessity because people are trying to make a living. So they're having to work for multiple employers to get in enough hours to be able to actually make ends meet. SB 1040 would direct the Oregon Health Authority and the Department of Human Services to look at consolidating the function of criminal background checks into one unit, as well as having the system to, as well as moving the system to electronic files. This bill, and I want to underline this several times, this bill is meant to start an important conversation about the state's role in healthcare workforce development. You will hear parties that will testify after me, both in support and in opposition. They will point out many complexities that need actually to be resolved. They will point out that it would have a fiscal impact to actually go ahead with this now. The intent of the sponsor of the bill is to start a conversation in this short supplemental session. Therefore, the chief sponsor of the bill has only requested a public hearing during this session.
Questions? Thank you. Yes.
First, I want to thank you for bringing this forward. And I wonder if the sponsor of the bill had considered not only the issues the bill brings up, which are obvious, and that we don't really know what our workforce looks like in many areas and what the geographical locations of some of the workforce is, but one of the big issues in cost in healthcare is something called credentialing, getting professionals, physicians, nurse practitioners, PAs, psychologists, others credentialed through insurers and with the state, and it's a maze to go through. And if someone were to move, or insurers change, they have to go through the process all over again. Often takes up to a year. Have they considered a universal registry that could also do credentialing?
I have not, but it might be an interesting suggestion if a certain member of the Senate who lives in Southern Oregon wanted to work on that area.
He does. He does. Thank you. Thanks for bringing it forward.
You're welcome.
All right.
He's talking about senators in Southern Oregon, so there's two of us on this committee.
I bet we both know about the same
Madam
way.
Chair, I would be happy if they both actually worked on it.
Yes.
It's
okay.
Good point.
Thank you, Senator Devlin. There's no further questions. With that, I'd like to call Amy Favé and Megan Moyer.
Chair Monica Anderson, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Megan Moyer. I'm with the Service Employee International Union, Local 503. And we asked Senator Devlin to sponsor this piece of legislation, as he stated, as a beginning of a larger conversation. We understand through many conversations that there are some technical problems as well as some substantial fiscal impact to this. So we are hoping, in our intent in bringing this forward, to begin a conversation both within the legislature and the health authority and DHS, as well as stakeholders, on the importance of looking at workforce development and looking at creating a strategy that puts Oregon in a position to meet its growing need. This bill, Senate Bill 1040, has two major components. The first is in workforce development, and the creation of the Universal Provider Registry allows a level of analysis of data that simply we don't have right now. Even with House Bill 2009 and the Healthcare Workforce Database, it is limited in whom it looks at and how it looks at workforce. It is limited to a particular number of licensed health professionals, and it looks at them as a snapshot of their licensure. What the Universal Provider Registry would do would be to expand the purview of the workforce to encompass a much broader definition of healthcare worker, not only licensed, but
I need some help.
paraprofessional and non-licensed or certified healthcare workers. The intent of this is to understand that our workforce shortage is not limited to licensed health professionals, but it is an overall shortage that will impact long-term care, psychiatry, chronic disease management, and as we look forward to meeting this needs, that we need to look at how we meet the needs from the bottom up, not just looking at those who may be at the most highest levels of training and expertise in healthcare, but also building a quality workforce with those who may not have that background. So the Universal Provider Registry would be able to look geographically, would be able to look from the perspective of different fields, such as geriatrics or psychiatry or children's mental health. It would allow us to not only look at what was going on with RNs, but we could say, what is happening? Why are we seeing such a workforce shortage in long-term care? And we could look at it at the path of individuals as they come in from their training. They start, let's say, in a nursing facility, but then they exit and end up showing up in a hospital. That may not be a bad thing. That may be a very good thing. We may learn that that's an efficient way of getting CNAs into the hospital workforce, but it does identify why we continue to have a CNA shortage in nursing facilities. This type of information allows us to look at a workforce as it flows. Are we losing people from healthcare, or are we just losing them from one particular field? Are they going somewhere else? Are they moving up career ladders, as we hope that they are, or are we having real barriers to advancement that this would help identify? So that is the purpose of the registry. There's also a component of the bill in Senate Bill 1040 that aims to streamline government and prevent redundancy, particularly with the paraprofessional healthcare workforce. Often these individuals put together a piecemeal of employment in order to fulfill the needed number of hours. Often there are home care workers with several clients at a time. Many workers in adult foster homes or group homes work at several different homes. The way we currently require criminal background checks is for employees to have criminal background checks done with every new employer or every promotion. For those workers who are changing employers or having multiple employers within short time frames, we are really being duplicative. We're having to run the exact same CRIM check that we did 2 weeks ago on the same individual. And this really looks at streamlining it, much like we do with the child care registry as well as the home care registry, where it is on a 2-year cycle. And when you're approved to work in that field, you can continue to take new clients or employers. And so it's looking at that as a possibility. As well as allowing DHS the ability to look at consolidating its criminal background check processes, and now the health authority. Right now, not all criminal background checks done by the Department of Human Services are actually done by the criminal background check unit. Every board, licensure board, does its own criminal backgrounds. They are not transferable. So if you get your CNA and you have a criminal background check done there, it is not transferable to DHS. There are some technical issues that I think this bill does not address in doing that, and it doesn't direct that. It simply asks the Oregon Health Authority and DHS to look at the possibility of streamlining that. So I appreciate the committee for hearing this bill. I really hope that it does start a conversation. I'm looking forward to working with the Health Authority, DHS, stakeholders, and the legislature on seeing how we might be able to accomplish something similar to this.
Thank you, Megan.
Chair Monis Anderson, members of the committee, my name is Amy Favre. I'm the Director of Legislative Affairs for the Oregon Health Authority. And I'm here today just to raise a few concerns that we've identified with Senate Bill 1040 as written, and also to offer up our participation during the interim to work with Megan and others to see if we can figure out a solution that may work. But just to quickly overview the bill, Senate Bill 1040 requires the Office for Health Policy and Research to create and maintain a universal registry of care database of providers in the state within the health care workforce database that you all created in House Bill 2009. Provider enrollment is dependent on a successful record check, and it must be renewed every 2 years. No public funds may be used to support the employment of a care provider who is not enrolled in the registry. The bill also requires DHS, in consultation with the Oregon Health Authority, to report to the legislature by January 2012 on the feasibility of centralizing and streamlining the criminal records check system across programs administered by DHS, the Health Authority, and the Home Care Commission, and to build an internet portal through which care providers can enroll in the registry and employers can verify the registry status of the employees. It's been difficult for us as an agency, both OHA and DHS, to assess the impacts of this bill. Several key terms in the bill have been very broadly defined or not defined at all, and there's little operational detail. But we can tell that, as written, this bill would create a significant new workload for most divisions in both agencies, public health, senior and people with disabilities, addiction and mental health, the Oregon Health Plan, and our administrative services function, as well as the Home Care Commission. The Office for Health Policy and Research would be required to create and maintain the proposed registry and to maintain a process so that the Oregon Health Authority and DHS and the Home Care Commission could add or remove individuals from the registry at will. In order to ensure that care providers are not enrolled in the registry and do not receive public funds, the registry would need to have some sort of real-time connections to the many provider and payroll systems that we currently have in the agencies. As the term care provider is very broadly defined, it's unclear where some of this information would come from. Unlike the workforce database, which we're currently developing, which is populated with data collected via the regular licensing boards of 7 of the 19 professional regulatory boards, this broad definition makes it likely that at least some of the workers would not be covered by those licensing agencies, and we would maybe have to get that information directly from the providers. In effect, this bill could put the Office of Health Policy and Research in the business of becoming a quasi-credentialing agency. The bill is unclear about some other important aspects of the proposed registry's scope and operations. Some of the roles of the different agencies are not clearly defined. It's unclear who would have the final responsibility for the accuracy of the information in the registry. And it's unclear how the registry would relate to the professional licensing boards. Without going into too much more detail about our concerns, I did want to say that the proposed registry is not well aligned with the Oregon Workforce Database that was created in House Bill 2009. That database was developed to be a research tool to inform policy development, whereas the proposed registry, as I've understood it, would have a direct impact on individuals' ability to work. We recognize the importance of healthcare providers in various settings, including the unlicensed care providers, to the healthcare workforce in the state. And though we appreciate the intention to integrate new programs within existing systems, this bill, as written, does not align well with the objectives and infrastructure of the healthcare workforce database. But that being said, we'd welcome the opportunity to continue this conversation in the interim and better understand from the proponents of the bill what their intended outcomes are, their goals, and how we might work together to find an effective and efficient path to achieving that outcome.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Morissette.
And hopefully by then the surgical technologists will be licensed so you can track them to see where they come from and where they go from there. That would be good. Thank you.
Yeah.
I think Amy's testimony points out the fact that we have an overly complicated system, and when you look at this bill, sometimes our best efforts to make things better might complicate things more than they're already complicated. So I do think this whole area needs a fresh approach.
Mayor Bates.
Yeah, I'm sure. Megan, I'd like to ask you kind of a process question, if I could. The Oregon Health Authority is just getting on its feet, so to speak, just forming up and starting to hopefully start to produce some changes in how we deliver health care in the state. And I'm kind of curious, the things proposed in this bill are appropriate. I would say if you really want to get into this kind of a discussion, you actually go further. As I mentioned earlier, credentialing issues are huge, and the difficulty of getting people credentialed, whether you're a pharmacist or a CNA, changing from one nursing home to another or one home health care agency or another, are huge. Whether it's physicians or nurse practitioners or PAs or CNAs or RNs, and we're talking of thousands of people here. I'm kind of curious why, and then I think bigger and broader issues, you know, medical malpractice, budgets for hospitals, how we pay physicians, primary care homes. We're trying to bring that all together in one place to have reasonable discussions and really make that work together as a single entity to produce good outcomes for people here in Oregon. And I continue to see individual bills floating up, you know, by themselves that aren't part of the integrated whole we're trying to look for. So my question is, do you have a conversation with the authority prior to bringing the bill forward and talk to them about what's your vision of this, what's your view on this? And if you did, what kind of response did you get from them?
Senator Mona Sanderson, Senator Bates, I did have a conversation with...
Sean Comer
prior to the February session, which I thought was actually a really productive meeting. He definitely pointed out that possibly the workforce database, as it was designed, would not be able to accommodate this type of information. I think the question was, should we keep it the way it's designed, or should we go a different direction? And I definitely have felt the wanting to bring to the conversation. A lot of our workforce development conversations have centered around licensed health professionals and have a little bit centered more around primary and acute care and haven't looked at healthcare in a broader context. And so one of the intentions of this legislation was to maybe bring some new stakeholders to the table with a little bit different perspective on workforce development and a little bit different perspective on the challenges in the workforce who may not be under a board, or if they are you know, a certified, not a licensed health professional.
Madam Chair, I'd like to hear what Sean has to say, because I want to hear what his response to it was. So I'm not asking more questions at this moment.
Right. Chair Morris Anderson, members of the committee, for the record, Sean Comer, Deputy Administrator, Office of Health Policy and Research. I would concur that the conversation was productive, and we sort of shared our concerns about the intent of the workforce database as created in 2009 and how it aligns with this. And I think that our offer in the interim is to figure out what's the best way to do that. So I think that we all knew that the workforce database was the first step, and how we expand that is sort of to be determined.
Have you started any preliminary conversations with the boards themselves to get them to start tracking and providing information?
Chair Modus Anderson, we have administrative rules already with the 7 licensing boards. We already have data from the medical board and the board of nursing already. So we're full steam ahead on that reporting program.
Great.
Yeah.
Madam Chair, Sean, when this proposal was brought to you, did you make an offer to go forward with the program to the authority, or did you say we'll look at that and think about it and do as you wish? I mean, what was your response to people bringing this proposal forward? I'd just like to hear what it was.
Yeah, Chairman Sanderson, Senator Bates, I think that the comments that Amy had today sort of reflect our initial conversation that we had before session. So it's not very much different than what you already heard.
Well, I
guess I'm just, I want to see this stuff run through the health authority. Mm-hmm. And that means the health authority has to be maybe a little more open to hearing other people.
Right.
Because if we keep having a hodgepodge of bills before us, we'll have lots of long discussions up here. But I'd much rather have a committee look at it carefully and thoughtfully over an interim and come back to us with a broad, far-reaching proposal, and if you need legislative change to do it, then this committee and under the chairman would help make a decision to that.
Right.
But But my sense is maybe, you know, we're being too rigid in how we look at things. The health authority is supposed to really step up and really change how we do things in this state. And if we don't do that, we won't bring costs under control. And this is an opportunity to not only see what the workforce looks like, see if it's appropriate, make changes in the workforce if we need to, but also to have huge cost savings in the system. So we should look at every opportunity to do that.
I really would concur that when we have health-related bills, if appropriate, that we really want recommendations to come out of the health authority with the expertise and the work, preliminary work. I mean, who knows? We may assign scope of practice to you also. All righty.
This actually makes sense.
I know. Okay, with that, if there's no further discussion, I would like to close the public hearing. And I would like to go in recess just a minute because I don't have a quorum.
Where's that?
Reconvene. All right. And now what I'd like to do is open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1046. And before we really get started here, I need to clarify some of the things that were said last meeting. I know that there was a public characterization of the State Board of Psychologist Examiners, and I want to get on record regarding Dr. Sammons, who is the psychologist who was appointed from the Psychology Board, that he was born in Walport and he was raised in Ashland, and then he entered the U.S. Navy for a 21-year career. He's an Oregon property owner and taxpayer, and he's in the process of constructing a house in Ashland. And he's worked for many years with Oregon Psychologists and Oregon Psychological Association, and has been a member of the Oregon Psychological Association for many years. When he decided to move from his state of residence, he applied for a license in October, or he was issued a permanent license in October 2009, and he actually initiated the licensure process in May of 2009. And going through the statement from the State Board of Psychologist Examiners, basically he had actually submitted an application for licensure and was approved in June 2008. And then he was awaited administration of the examination, which he took and passed in October of 2008. So, and then the board did issue a statement regarding their appointment process. It was done in public. There was no indication of being subversive. They met the letter of the intent of the legislation, which was to appoint 3 licensed psychologist members, and that is exactly what they did. So I wanted to get that piece on record. And another thing that I want to get on record is what is consensus? And I think you need to remember that consensus, there are, when we get into consensus, there are some aspects of an individual's personal opinions that are set aside for the purpose of finding a common ground for agreement. So, yes, you're setting aside your personal opinions to try to come to consensus, a common ground for agreement. And I truly believe that that process was upheld. And one final thing that I want to state is that part of the process, and it is in the notes of the work group, that the members of this group would not stop the process of the consensus agreement from moving forward. And unfortunately, I feel that there now are some members of this group that are trying to stop the process of this consensus agreement from moving forward. So, with that, it is a part of the political process. So, in wanting everyone's own personal opinions to be part of whatever we're going to pass out of committee. And that is why we went with this consensus process, and I feel that it did work. Now, with that, is there any sign-up sheets in there?
No sign-up.
No. Okay, good. Yes, Senator Bates.
Madam Chair, you opened up a difficult situation. I'm not going to go back and discuss any of those issues you just brought up except for one, and I stand by my previous statements. I'm not going to change that. But there is one part of the consensus process that still concerns me. I think you're aware of it, too. And I want to be clear about two pieces. One, I asked one particular psychiatrist to throw his hat in the ring on this, and Dr. Norwood Knight Richardson, if you feel that was inappropriate for me to ask him to put his hat in the ring, I accept that. But I also want you to know that I did not ask him to be on that committee. I didn't put any pressure on him to be on that committee. I just asked him to submit his name. And the choice was made to put him there. It was not my choice, and I didn't put any pressure to put him there. The other thing that concerns me about the process, and I think it was a good process that was set up, is that Representative Kennemer went to that group at the very beginning of the process, and correct me if I'm wrong here, and basically told the group that if you don't reach a consensus to bring a bill forward on how we will go about obtaining the rights for psychologists to write prescriptions, that the bill that was previously on the agenda in the previous session would be passed through regardless of what their outcome was. And so basically, on the consensus process, a gun was put to the head of some people, I feel, to do something, no matter what they felt was the appropriate action to take, whether it be a PA program or anything else. You've got to do this. If you don't do it, we're going to put this bill through the way it was. And I'm afraid that was an inappropriate thing for that representative to do, and I would tell him that personally, too, if he was here. Others may disagree with that. Maybe that's the way the consensus program should work. I have concerns about that, and I'm just presenting that, and I hope you understand my position on it.
That's true. And I, from the notes that were put forward, Representative Kennemer did say that, but I still go back to the premise that it's the legislature and not Representative Kennemer that determines what product is going to come out of this legislative session. So with that, we have some amendments before us, and I would like you to look at the -5s and the -6s. This is not changing, the -5s is not changing anything substantial. Let me pull it out here. It's just clarifying that a healthcare professional who they must collaborate with a prescribing a healthcare professional who collaborates with a prescribing psychologist as required by the rules adopted is not liable for any injury resulting from the care provided by the prescribing psychologist, unless the injury results from the gross negligence or reckless, wanton, or intentional misconduct of the healthcare professional. So that's basically covering the physician's...
Are we in work session?
No, we're just in public hearing. I just wanted to go over these amendments with you there. Now, then, the dash sixes, they're... was great concern about children, and any psychologist who is prescribing has to consult with their primary care physician for sure. That was part of what the work group came up with, and it has to be documented in the notes of the chart that they have consulted with their primary care physician. But there was still some concern regarding children. And so I had drafted the dash sixes, which actually include the dash threes. So let's just go through what the dash sixes. It's basically do you want to describe the dash sixes or should I just go ahead?
Can you give a quick read?
The dash sixes basically is just codifying that, of course, the State Board of Psychologists Examiners, truly, actually, the Oregon Medical Board, with concurrence of the Oregon State Board of Psychologists Examiners, shall adopt rules requiring a prescribing psychologist, to maintain an ongoing collaboration with the healthcare professional who oversees a patient's medical care. And that means they need to have necessary medical examinations, the patient does, and the prescribed drug is appropriate for the patient's medical condition, and the prescribing psychologist and healthcare professional discuss in a timely manner any significant changes in the patient's medical or psychological condition. After consulting with a member or two of this committee, wanted to address children under the age of 18. So a prescribing psychologist, it has to go through the same regimen as with any other patient, except besides their primary care physician, they will also have to have a consult with a child psychiatrist. And so that's what the dash sixes do.
Does that mean that an MD is competent to prescribe Ritalin without consulting a psychiatrist?
No.
A physician can still do that.
Absolutely.
And may not really understand what the problem is.
That's true.
But a psychiatrist or psychologist would have to consult a psychiatrist.
Absolutely.
I maintain that there are primary care physicians that don't know enough about it to make the right decision. And why don't, you know, I
hear your point. And I think that's why we need psychologists in the milieu working with general practitioners.
No, I'm worried about MDs.
I know.
Yeah.
I hear you.
Okay. I think we ought to include them and make them consult a psychiatrist as well.
Madam Chair, what about somebody who doesn't have a PCP? How are they handled?
A PCP.
Not everybody's got a primary care physician. I mean, you say they have to consult, and there may not be anybody to consult with.
They would definitely have to have that person get a primary care physician, or he would not be prescribing, or she would not be prescribing. And I see nods out there.
That's not an easy thing to do.
It might not be easy to do. Ma'am, can we have an open discussion?
Yes, absolutely.
You know, the phrase collaboration is a difficult one for me to put my mind around in this context. Does it mean that if someone who's prescribing for a child decides to change the dosage of the medication, they should somehow collaborate with with a psychiatrist, or are they allowed to make some changes, adding a second drug, removing a drug? How do we know? I mean, it gets very complex, and I just don't see how this thing can actually work this way.
If you recall, I mean, if you read the bill is very explicit that the recommendations will come from, and I always forget the name, just a minute, will come from the Committee on Prescribing Psychologists under the Oregon Medical Board. I mean, this committee is going to be composed of 3 psychologists and 3 physicians, and one must be a psychiatrist, and they are going to be reviewing and making recommendations to the medical board on the clinical training and on the education, and these are the types of things that they will be addressing. So it would be under the medical board purview to start addressing some of these very complex issues. And this committee would then be reporting to the medical board, and then it will be totally up to the medical board to adopt the rules for the requirements, the standards, the education requirements, the formulary revisions. So truly, and I know that we had one letter from a member, the psychopharmacologist, Dr. Hammer, who was saying that there was great contention between psychologists and psychiatrists on what that prescribing definitely, let me read it to say, that the prescription, what Dr. Hammer was saying, the prescription of psychotropic medications by psychologists is not the practice of medicine, according to the psychologist, therefore shouldn't necessarily be under the review of the medical board, and they're absolutely opposite of what the psychiatrists say. Which do believe it be, and that was part of the consensus, that it would be under the medical board. So,
Madam Chair, how many members? 6 members, 3 MDs, 1 a psychiatrist, 3 psychologists, right?
3 psychologists and 3 physicians.
What if they lock up? Shouldn't we have a 7th member?
If they can come back later, I'm not worried, and this is what the group, the consensus came up with, because of course the psychiatrists didn't want to have a majority of psychologists, and the psychologists didn't want a majority of psychiatrists.
Okay, I guess what I see is a lockup, and nothing will ever happen because there's a lockup. I mean, that
could be, but I think that these are very professional people, and I would like to see the process try to work.
Now, let me clarify one other thing, though. Then whether or not, under what circumstances, a psychologist or even an MD would have to consult a psychiatrist when dealing with psychotropic drugs would be up to the board. They would iron out those rules. Is that what you're saying?
Like I said, they are the ones that are going to set the standards, and so, and we can't just get into the nitty gritty of making these types of decisions because that's what the boards are for.
How about having the governor's office breaking the tie, or someone?
They'll be back. They'll be back to us if this process doesn't work.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
I think what the bill is trying to do is define a new relationship in healthcare, a new relationship between different groups that care for people. For first, I'd argue it probably isn't necessary. I think there's another way of doing it, and that's the PA system, but we're not going to talk about that right at the moment. We're talking about what's in front of us. This is a very difficult thing to do with legislation. It's something that's new and different, and I think doing this and attempting to do this in this setting, in a short session, is something I feel very uncomfortable voting on. We're trying to define an entirely different relationship that affects children with very powerful drugs. And I just got to tell you that while I appreciate what's come forward here, I am very uncomfortable with trying to lay out at this level something that is this sensitive to children. I really just can't support you on this. I'm sorry.
Okay. Any other comments? All right. Are you ready to go into work session? Okay. With that, I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1046, and I will open a work session on Senate Bill 1046.
Madam Chair, I move the Dash 5 amendment to Senate Bill 1046.
Senator Cruz moves the Dash 5 amendments to Senate Bill 1046. Any discussion? Clerk
yes.
will call.
Oh. I'd like to have a discussion. I would have a. Oops, I'm sorry. I'm not sure the trial lawyers will, you know, or a court would uphold this. We've got some pretty strong language from courts saying that holding someone not liable to these conditions is something I wonder if it's actually going to hold up if a mistake is made. Or do we have any testimony on what this actually means?
We had Marissa... we had the Dash 5s, which you don't have, and now we got the Dash 6s because she was concerned.
What are the Dash 5s here?
No, I meant the Dash 4s.
4s are part of the 6s.
And so Legislative Council was concerned and so said that this would be more appropriate language.
Do we have any idea what gross negligence is considered to be? I mean, there's lots of... I'm just not sure this has real meaning, what it really worked.
I'm not an attorney, but I relied on Legislative Counsel to explain, and let's just read her. When we first got the Dash 4 amendments, she said that the Dash 4 amendments limited the liability of healthcare professionals who collaborate with prescribing psychologists. And we were concerned about the validity of the way the Dash 4s were written because of a Supreme Court decision, Clark versus OHSU, where, what that did, it limited the ability of the Legislative Assembly to eliminate liability for common law causes of action such as negligence. And they based their analysis on a Section 10, Article 1 of the Constitution, and the court upheld that the Legislative Assembly could cap the liability of officers and employees of public bodies only to the extent that the Legislative Assembly provided an adequate alternative remedy that did not constitute an emasculated version of the remedy that was available at common law. And basically a concurring opinion was made by another judge, and so we had to come up with a language. What she said to me, you may want to consider language allowing liability against collaborating healthcare professionals for gross negligence or wanton misconduct. So that's why that had to be put in, just in case the physician, the consulting physician.
I understand what you're trying to get to. I just wonder what an attorney who was suing in a case would actually say. Is there a standard of care here? What's the standard of care in this relationship?
Standard of care is going to be set up by the Oregon Medical Board. I mean, that standards, well, not standards of care, but the standards for prescribing.
Well, Madam Chair, I'm going to vote for this, hoping that it would give protection if this actually ever occurred and if this bill went forward, but I'm not sure that this actually covers anybody in any way, shape, or form. It would have to be tested in court, and that's where the decision would have been made. And I would think that standard of care would be the first thing that would come up, is what's the standard of care in this relationship, and was standard of care met? Because when you go past standard of care, then you get into gross negligence, and obviously intentional misconduct is a slam dunk, but the rest of it is... I mean, I hope you can do it. If you do that, I would ask that for myself and some other people in
That's
some
true.
Situations. We'd love to have a situation where we had less liability. But I just want to be put on the record. I am not certain this actually protects the psychiatrist or the primary care physician who may be collaborating in a case, because I think standard of care is going to come up, but who knows what standard of care is in a collaboration issue like this. It's a new relationship.
Yes, Senator Marcia.
I guess I'm going to throw another concern in the mix. This is Dr. Maureen Nash, psychiatrist from the Quality Center for Geriatric Psychiatry in Forest Grove, and she's especially concerned with psychologists being able to prescribe for senior citizens. Some older patients may have as many as 15 separate prescriptions for a variety of ailments, including for psychotropic drugs, and psychiatrists don't or won't have psychologists won't have the medical training to understand the potential interactions, and so I'm sure that the group, the six people who will meet, will take that into consideration, because, you know, it isn't just the children who are maybe at risk. It may be even more the senior citizens who have all these drugs, and I've had personal experience with that in my family, and sometimes there is a reaction because they're not keeping track of which drugs they're taking.
Senator Morissette, I'd go back to Section 7 of the bill, where there has to be a requirement for ongoing collaboration with the patient's primary care provider, and they have to ensure that necessary medical examinations are conducted. They have to ensure that the prescribed drug is appropriate, and I think that gets into changing dosages, is appropriate for the patient's medical condition, and must discuss any significant changes in the patient's medical or psychological condition. Okay. And all of this has to be documented in the medical record.
Well, there's this incident that happened personally the last 2 weeks, because my wife did have an infection on a weekend. The doctor wasn't around. The substitute doctor had no idea what her record was, which kind of blew me away, and so prescribed a antibiotic which took care of the fever but completely threw off her Coumadin level, and that was a minor emergency and still is right now. And so there are a lot of these complicating things.
I like the I wish that we could have more of a collaborative approach in all our medical but we're human, and very difficult to be perfect in a science that is not perfect.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I understand Dr. Bates' concern here. I think this might stand simply because we're not denying remedy, we're just limiting remedy. So it may stand. I think it's worth a shot.
I'm going to vote for it. But I want to put out there I have concerns.
Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Bates?
Aye.
Senator Morissette?
Aye.
Senator Morse?
You don't
want to
be here. Still back out.
Senator Morse, we are in work session, and we are discussing the Dash 5 amendments regarding liability. And this actually will cover, make sure that the psychiatrist or physician is not held liable for some misconduct of a psychologist, except for gross, wanton, and negligent behavior.
Okay, Madam Chair, that sounds reasonable.
All right, we're in the process of a roll call vote, so we'll, once we're done with this particular... Okay. We'll bring you up to speed.
Okay, Senator Morse?
Aye.
Vice Chair Cruz?
Aye.
Chair Monitor?
Aye. Amendment Dash 5 amendments adopted. And now let's, we do not have a fiscal yet on the Dash 6s. Rick?
Well, I can call you if there are any permits keeping this.
Okay. We would have to suspend the rules, and I'm not sure I'd have four votes to suspend the rules on the Dash 6s unless the committee is willing to do that. The Dash 6s, Senator Morris, happened to just clarify that that a prescribing psychologist must collaborate with the primary care physician and has to be documented in the medical chart, must make sure that that patient has medical examinations, and then it also adds a piece on the children under the age of 18, Besides the primary care physician, that prescribing psychologist must have a consult with a child psychiatrist. So we're just codifying how important the role is for a prescribing psychologist to have with the primary care physician and then for a child with a child psychiatrist. So that's what the dash sixes are about. And I just need...
Madam Chair, are we going to move the bill out of committee today? Is that your intent?
Only if the committee is ready to move the bill out of committee today. It would go to Ways and Means.
Okay. Madam Chair, can we hold this bill till Thursday?
Sure. You were just given
the sections.
The sixes. You need to look at them, think about it, and then we can bring them back.
Yeah, Madam Chair, we'd have the fiscal by Thursday. And,
yes, we would.
And I'd just soon do it. I mean, it's going to Ways and Means anyway, so I'd just soon have all the paperwork before we do anything.
And I'll have a dash to have an amendment for you to look at by then, too.
That's why I didn't want you to wait till Thursday.
Okay.
Vote it up or down. I think it's an alternative that might work.
Because I do believe in the consensus process. And I think, Senator Morris, to bring you up to date, that you did miss, there was what the work group stated is that members of the group would not stop the process of the consensus agreement from moving forward. They had all agreed to that. And as you know, that there are some members that are trying to stop the process of the the forward progress of the consensus agreement. And then I made clarification of Dr. Salmon's, and I can tell you that in private on that. And also, I do want to say you have to remember that consensus, there are some aspects of an individual's opinion that has to be given up or set aside for the purpose of consensus, for the purpose of finding common ground for moving forward. Okay.
And let's not forget how that first meeting went, too.
That's absolutely true.
Thank you.
And that was where Representative Kimmer said you have to do it this way. But I still counter that the legislature is the one who determines, not Representative Kimmer.
I'd also point out, Madam Chair, that is not the first time nor the last that a member of the legislature has gone into a group and says,
My way or no way.
Yeah.
I understand. That's one of the members of that group.
I've heard of it happening before.
Sure it has, and I'm sure you're right. But the question is, were the people in that group understood that that isn't necessarily the way it was going to happen? I don't know. I was not there. I don't know what all happened.
Okay. With that, I will close the works. Open it. I want to move this forward to Thursday. Right.
Good.
Now,
that's good enough.
Yeah. So I'll close the work session on 10:40. And colleagues, Jim Davis wanted to talk, just give a brief comment. So I'm going to reopen a public hearing on Senate Bill 1040. I believe it was 1040.
I want the bill to say.
Yes.
The 46 is the routine we have for Thursday.
Well, but we're not going to do anything.
Right.
My biggest statement.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I did drive down for the very purpose of speaking to this bill, and I really appreciate this very much. I'm Jim Davis. I represent the Oregon State Council for Retired Citizens, the Oregon Alliance for Retired Americans, and United Seniors of Oregon, and we are in strong support of the SEIU efforts around the home care workers, and we support the Senate Bill 1040. I just wanted to give you just a few short perspectives, and I won't take much of your time, but as a gerontologist and senior advocate, I've been working with long-term care and home care issues for 30-plus years, advocating on them and working around policy for these issues. Our groups were in the forefront of support for the home care workers, and we were there for the passage of the initiatives and the Home Care Commission, and these issues are of great importance to us, issues around benefits. We feel that people who care for our children and our elders and people with disabilities should be paid better at better rates, and we feel they should have collective bargaining rights and certainly workers' comp and things like that. But one of the things that most interested us in that fight back then was having an adequate registry. And I know there's some issues that need to be dealt with that we're not totally aware of, but we felt very, very important that there be a registry of home care workers to give us a better grasp of who's out there caring for our elders and for people with disabilities, and to have some good data. As a professor, I can understand having good data when you have grants to know what's out there and kind of their career path. It would be really interesting to see what their career path is. And so this kind of workforce data is very, very important to us, and was way back when we started to look at this. And I think, as you all are aware of, and we were talking about the Oregon Health Authority and their role in this, but also the senior and disability services system that we have in the state, the community-based long-term care system we have in the state, is a national model. And it's been torn down a bit, but it still is one of the great national models. But what I want to make you aware of, and I keep talking about this in my different testimony, is that this wonderful system is not prepared for the aging revolution that's at hand now, with the boomers heading in to their senior years. The senior population will double. There's no way around it. It will double, and that means that we need twice as many home care providers and twice as many workers out in the field to deal with what's going to ultimately happen within this system. And so at this point, we need to be having a streamlined system. We need to be providing support to our home care workers, and that's what we always feel is very, very necessary. And through things like registries and adequate data, you can do that. And so anyway, I just came here to support the home care workers, and we look forward to whatever interim activities there will be on this.
Thank you. And you, yes, yeah. Senator Marcet.
Did you declare a conflict of interest? Aren't you one of those boomers?
Yeah, I am. I am. Right in the middle. We're going to hit it hard.
We are. You're a boomer.
I refuse to be.
I'm a boomer.
Bates
is a boomer.
There's a lot of boomers around.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Okay. I am. All right. With that, I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1040. And colleagues, do I need to move anything else forward? 1029 is being moved forward, but that we don't plan to do anything with Senate Bill 1029. Oh, yeah. Teresa, let us know.
Okay.
But we're still carrying it forward just to keep it alive, and it has a good relating clause. All right. With that, we are adjourned.